What's up? It's Delaney, and I'd love to invite you to become an honorary co-host of the Self-Helpless podcast. Do you want to pick episode topics and guests? Done. Want to surprise your loved ones with shout-outs on the show for a birthday, project launch, a much-needed divorce? Whatever you're up to, would love to be a part of the celebration. Get your favorite and least favorite quotes featured on the podcast, submit questions for our special guests, and find lots more new features and surprises at patreon.com/selfhelpless. You'll also get added to our Patreon Insider email list to easily redeem rewards via a quick email reply. Because we know hanging out on Patreon isn't everyone's thing. You can also opt out of emails if you prefer to be a silent supporter of the show. And don't worry, we do not Scrooge McDuck these contributions. 100% of proceeds go directly to operating expenses that make this weekly podcast possible and available to all. Learn more at patreon.com/selfhelpless or simply click the link in this episode's description. Thank you for helping me fill the void of being the last standing host of the Self-Helpless podcast. Thank you so much.
What makes a life a good one? Is it the adventure you have? Or the friends you find along the way? Maybe it's pursuing your passion while striving to protect, defend, and save what you believe in every single day. So, what makes a life a good one? In the Coast Guard, we think it's all of the above and more. But you'll have to find out for yourself. Visit GoCoastGuard.com to learn more.
I'm no good at taking good advice, and I'm self-careless, so don't tell me twice that lately I've been so stuck in my head that I forget just about everything my therapist said. Maybe I'm self-helpless. Maybe I'm self-helpless. Maybe I'm self-helpless. Maybe we are all self-helpless.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to Self Helpless. I'm Delaney Fisher, and today I'm sharing a conversation I had with Jenna Flood, who is a slow fashion stylist, and she helps people build sustainable wardrobes that they love and feel comfortable and confident in. I love the fact that Jenna doesn't just focus on what's trendy without thought to anything else. She also prioritizes how something is made, where it comes from, are workers paid a living wage, were animals harmed in the process, etc. So I wanted to have a conversation with not just a stylist, but a very conscious one, someone who really understands the big impact we can all make by how and what we purchase. And I gotta say, it was kind of a bummer how hard it was to find someone who was prioritizing all of this at the time we had this conversation. I'm sure there are way more people now talking about all this and taking it all into account, but I first had this conversation with Jenna about 2 years ago. So she actually lives in Australia, and even though the time zone was kind of difficult to plan around for us to have this conversation, it was really important for me that I brought someone to the show who was doing this kind of work in this space. And yeah, Australia. Like I said, it was hard at the time to find somebody who really ticked all the boxes here. You know, we have so much influence on our world by simply how and what we purchase. And I know we can often feel really powerless over all of the global issues we hear about constantly. And I know it can feel easy to slip into the mindset that one person can't make a difference or change anything because things just feel too big or too overwhelming. So I think it's a good reminder for us to scale back to what little things we can do daily to make a difference. And how we spend is such an important way to do that. And what I love about it is that it can be worked into the habits we already have. So it can feel a bit easier than maybe other ways to contribute that you might feel is it feels too overwhelming or not super attainable for you. I heard someone say once that how we spend our money is the equivalent to voting, to casting a vote on something. Every time you pull out your wallet, you are voting for something. You are voting to keep more of that thing coming. And by not spending on something, you're voting for less of that thing, or you're voting for it to go away. So what is your money contributing to? What's the process behind that thing you're buying? Who benefits from it? Who doesn't benefit at all or is actually harmed by it? I like to think of these simple things we can do as everyday activism, actions we're already taking that we're tweaking a bit. So we as individuals can work as a group to create a lot of amazing change. So I hope this episode makes it easier for all of us to spend according to our ethics and values, when it comes to what we wear, because a lot of companies don't make it very easy or very transparent to know where things are coming from. And sometimes we just got to do a little digging or a little bit of learning about this stuff. And luckily, it's gotten easier over time. There's a lot of companies that are very transparent. Everything is very easily found on their website and things like that. And so in this episode, Jenna simplifies all of this for us. Not only how to determine our own style, but what practices we can adopt that we're really proud of. How to find new things that are as ethically made as possible. I also really enjoy keeping my wardrobe simple to reduce decision fatigue. About what to wear. So we talked a fair amount about that as well, just simplification to help your own, you know, daily, you know, stress. And Jenna mentions that when it comes to selecting new items and trying to do our due diligence, that perfection, it's impossible, but improvement is totally doable. And just a quick announcement, if you've been subscribed to my email list, the D List, and you've been getting access to my private podcast, Career Crush, over there for a long time, I'm actually in the process of integrating that podcast with Self Helpless. So some of the episodes I'll be sharing going forward were for that platform originally, and I'm combining it all into one thing over here. I know some of you have already noticed who tune into both. So yes, you'll hear it all on Self-Helpless now. I really want to expand what we talk about on Self-Helpless, not only health and well-being with a variety of professionals in their respective fields, which is awesome, but I really want to infuse more personal stories from people who might not have a social media following or a best-selling book or be on TV, and they have something to share that can help people by simply telling their story and sharing how they overcame something. And I really also want to share people with you who have unconventional careers and lifestyles, and they've made changes in their life. So yeah, if you've been a subscriber to both shows, first of all, thank you so much. And I'm just not going to be doing my private podcast anymore. Everything will be shared and found on Self-Helpless. So it'll be a one-stop shop for everything, nice and simple. If you're curious, I'll be sharing more in depth about this decision and some other updates with my email list in the next week or so. But those of you over there on the D List, more info will be coming at you very soon. If you still want the other resources that I share for free on my list, you know, different gigs I hear about and media opportunities, cool invitations, things like that, you can sign up at DelaneyFisher.com. Again, it's totally free. You can also just click the link in this episode's description and it'll take you to my website. All right, everyone, here is my conversation with Jenna Flood. If you want to just start off by sharing a little bit about what you do and what led you to this work.
I kind of fell into this work by accident, to be honest. I've always been into fashion, you know, as a teenager. Once I got a disposable income, you know, I bought lots of clothing. Never thought about where it came from or, you know, what suited me or anything like that. I started, you know, working in fashion here in Melbourne, and then I started thinking about, oh, maybe I could be a stylist. I studied styling at Australian Style Institute, which is one of the leading institutes here for styling.
Awesome.
And I noticed that no one was talking about where our clothing comes from or where it goes. Like, I just sort of started to get into slow fashion and just sort of started to, you know, think about what I was putting on my body, and, you know, clothing just didn't appear out of thin air. Like, it had to come from somewhere. And at the same time I started styling, this was about 2016, 2017, I also watched a documentary by The Minimalists, which I'm sure you're familiar with.
Yes.
And yeah, well, it sort of just led me down this huge rabbit hole of like slow fashion, veganism, owning less, of course, minimalism. And it just all clicked together and just made so much sense for me. So I just started talking about it. I started learning about it and other people started talking about it with me. And they're like, oh, I really love what you do. So I just kept going because I felt that if I started talking about it more, people will start talking about it and it'll be like the industry would slowly start to get better. And it has here in Melbourne, definitely. So yeah, I just literally just talked because people like listening and I liked having these conversations and hearing people's points of view. And I made a community. So that's how it happened. It wasn't really planned, but I'm glad it happened.
Oh, so cool. I feel like that's when the coolest things happen. One thing leads to another. Things kind of organically unfold for you. And can you share what's the difference between fast fashion and slow fashion?
Yeah, so fast fashion is typically things made, obviously, at a fast speed. So traditional fashion has a turnaround of about 6 months to a year. Especially back in the olden days. But nowadays, you know, fast fashion can be in stores within like as little as 4 weeks of a month, which it shouldn't be that fast because it puts pressure on the supply chain, our resources, the people making it. You know, it makes people send things via air, which is worse than sending it via ship. So things like that. But it's typically, it's trends, just fast, fast, fast. You know, you're consuming things one after the other. But with slow fashion, obviously you're slowing it right down. Things are considered, things are made fairly, people are paid fairly to make them. It takes longer to maybe design or get them to production stage because there's more thought put in that, into that design and production, like, you know, where the pocket should actually sit or how well it fits different size bodies or is this fabric the best one. So it is more expensive, yes, but you're paying the true cost of a garment. A garment really should not be $5 or $20. Mm. It should be much more than that when you think about construction and how much it actually takes to make an item. Yeah, so fast fashion, just speed, 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 piles high of clothing. And it's usually like, you know, really trend driven with styles that only last, you know, sometimes even just 1 week, that sort of thing.
Yeah. Okay. Totally makes sense. I made some lifestyle changes several years ago now, where I became vegan and minimalist and that whole trajectory. So I very much resonate with your story. And I, you know, up until a couple years ago, I didn't really spend much time on like what I wore and I didn't really care. I'll just like, you know, whatever's in my closet, whatever people gift me, all that stuff. And as I started scaling my business, I started to want to put effort into what I was wearing and how I looked and feel good in my clothing. And I can't believe how big of a difference it's made in my own confidence from mm-hmm. somebody who used to truly not give a shit about fashion or what I was wearing. And it really blew my mind, which is why I wanted to talk to you about all this, because I think as entrepreneurs, it can be so easy to put like fashion and what we wear on the back burner for ourselves because we're growing the business and we're doing all these things. And so if somebody really wants to start making more of an effort with their clothing, but they feel so overwhelmed by simplifying their wardrobe or their closet or anything like that, where is the first place they could start when looking at their own closet?
It's always best to start with what you have. And I think it's just to start slow. Do not get rid of everything that you don't wear because you will find that your body shape may change or you may like a different style a little bit later down the track. So just start slow. What I like to do is keep track of what I wear. So it could be like, oh, I love to wear this black t-shirt with these pink pants, whatever your color palette is. But I really hate wearing them with the blue t-shirt, for example. But I love wearing the blue t-shirt with this orange skirt. So keep track of what you're wearing maybe over a month or so. Of course, you know, seasons will change. But if you find that you're like, oh, I never reached for these skinny leg jeans, then maybe it's time to let them go. Here in Melbourne, we had many lockdowns over COVID, so no one wants to wear skinny jeans anymore because it's uncomfortable. So if you're finding there's an item in your wardrobe that's uncomfortable, maybe it's time to let it go and make room for something that's better. I really do think it's about starting slow, figuring out what you have and finding the gaps. So if you like every day you get dressed, you're like, man, I could really have a white t-shirt to tie this look together. Then that's when you start searching for the white t-shirt. Like, you know, you don't have to buy sustainable fashion. There's, you know, secondhand fashion. You just buy what you can afford and what you can care for.
Yeah.
But the thing is, it has to work with what you do. So say you, you know, if you figure out your lifestyle, so maybe in the morning you go for a walk with your dog and then you sit down to record a podcast or whatever. And then at night you just sort of maybe go to a restaurant with your partner or something. That's, you know, you don't really need a ball dress anywhere in there unless you want to walk your dog right. in a ball dress. I mean, go for it. But if you've got a wardrobe that doesn't balance out with your lifestyle, so maybe you have like all these dresses, but you live in the cold, cold area, like find the balance for your wardrobe and it'll make it so much easier on yourself when you're getting dressed. You won't have those what do I wear moments. You won't be like, oh, I've got nothing to wear, and you'll rush out and buy something. You won't have those moments because your wardrobe will go with your lifestyle and you'll love what's in it as well. When it comes to buying something new for your wardrobe, really think about it. So instead of being like, oh, this white shirt, it'll do, it's perfect, even though it's not perfect and it doesn't button up correctly or it gapes over the chest, like take your time to find the right thing. It may mean like living a little bit without a white shirt, but like only you will notice. Only you will notice what's wrong with your wardrobe. No one else will notice. So I think the main thing is just take it slow and figure out what you are needing in your wardrobe, because then you'll buy the best and you'll love it and you'll wear it.
Yeah. Oh, that's such a good tip and so hard too. I know for me, I get very impatient. The second I know that I need two white shirts, I buy the first ones that I find, and I'm a big thrifter. So I'll go to a thrift shop and then I'll realize, yeah, I don't really like this. It was just more of an impulse move. And now I have to just continue the search.
That's not just the sound of that first sip of Morning Joe. It's the sound of someone shopping for a car on Carvana from the comfort of home.
That's a good blend.
It's time to take it easy, like answering some easy questions to get pre-qualified for a car in minutes.
Talk about starting the morning right.
Just like customizing your terms so your car fits your budget.
Mm-mm-mm.
Visit Carvana.com or download the app to experience car shopping the way it should be. Convenient. Comfortable. Ah.
What process do you recommend for people who are starting to kind of weed out their clothing? And like you said, you're keeping track of what you're wearing and now you're noticing what you don't wear. Do you recommend they hide that stuff before they donate it or kind of donate it right away? Or like, do you have a certain process for kind of maintaining like a simplified closet?
It really depends on what type of person you are. I'm like, get it out of my house right now sort of person. And I'm lucky enough to work at like a consignment style store where I can sell and buy clothing. So I usually take my clothing there and get store credit, and then I can spend that on new clothing. Otherwise, I do donate it. But I do recommend maybe putting it in a box, and maybe like if you're not quite sure you want to let go of something, pop it in a box and put a date on it, like, you know, 6 months from now. Like, of course, you have to take into consideration weather changes. Don't get rid of winter coats in summer because we'll need them again.
Right.
But yeah, so 6 months from now, you put on the box and just sort of tuck it away underneath the bed or in the wardrobe somewhere, and put a reminder in your phone. And then when the reminder pops up, you can go through the box. And if you're like, oh, I didn't even think about these things, I didn't even miss them, then it's probably a sign you can let them go. You can donate them, you can share them with a friend, you can sell them. There's recycling programs here in Australia that you can send, ripped and torn clothing to instead of putting it in the bin. So we should not put clothing in the bin. It's not great for our environment. There's so many different ways. And of course, I'm in Australia, not in the States, so I don't really know the exact ones there. But if you Google, you will find them. They will pop up. And the more and more you get into this sort of community, the more you'll find like ads on your Instagram advertising you of these things. But yeah, I think to figure out if you find that you don't like waiting for things, maybe you're not a box with 6 months on it, and you can freely let them go. But if you find you're a little bit unsure, then pop them in that box and wait a few more months.
I love it. You mentioned that the colors that we look great in or feel great in. I know that I kind of accidentally stumbled into colors that I didn't realize looked good on me, and now they're kind of part of my regular wardrobe. Do you have any recommendations for anybody who might not know what colors they look great in, or some go-to pieces that they might be able to have?
So colors are interesting. I know a lot of stylists do sort of rely on them to help clients build their wardrobe, and they are a great tool, but you don't want to get boxed in by it. So you don't want to be like, oh, in spring, summer, I'll only wear this, like, because there are so many colors out there. And even if they don't look good next to your face, you might be able to wear them on the bottom half or in an accessory or something like that. I found with colors that at this, like when I was younger, I'd wear, you know, all the colors, didn't care. But then as I sort of shifted towards a more minimal wardrobe, I went with black and white because it's a really safe bet. But then as I sort of, you know, changed careers and sort of discovered more colors, I sort of started slowly introducing color back in. And obviously I like natural tones. Because I'm, you know, got the black and white already, so it's a great base. So I started to introduce like tans and a little bit of green back in, and I felt really happy and confident in them. So I think that's the main thing, feeling happy and confident. You'll know when something doesn't suit you, you'll know in your gut. And if you hold it up next to yourself and you're like, oh no, I look sick, then you know it's not right for you. You will instantly know. I think it's important to maybe experiment a little bit with color before you sort of lock yourself off like I did, wearing only black and white. So just experiment a little bit and see how you feel. Again, you can write it down. I do think it's important to experiment with fashion before you sort of create your minimalist wardrobe, because I've had people say to me, but don't you miss wearing such and such? I'm like, no, because I'm comfortable and confident in what I already own now. And sure, there might be like, you know, maybe a print or something added down the track. But I think sort of having a little play with it and then sort of slowly creating that color palette that you do like and you feel confident in, will help you. And if all the colors sort of match together, like, you know, you get denim matches with black and white, and then maybe introduce like, you know, a tan, which sort of works well against denim and white as well. And then the green, like, you know, sort of tie in with that. So you'll find these colors tie in. And when you look at your wardrobe and, like, you know, maybe the neon pink stands out and you're like, well, it doesn't really match the rest of my color palette. So why do I have this neon pink color standing out? Like, it will feel like the odd one out. So you're like, oh, maybe it's not a color for me. Simple as that.
That is such a great point. We all know when we don't feel good in something. Maybe people are saying this looks good on me or they like it, but I am not feeling it. And I think that's what my wardrobe was truly filled with. It was just like a lot of dark colors that I was told was good, you know, were good colors for like a very pale blonde lady. And,
yes.
And then I accidentally fell into other colors that I didn't realize that I really liked on myself. And because I'm a thrifter, I will go and whatever is there, I will buy. And so I was actually looking for a certain style of like a few different dresses. And I was more focused on the style than the color, and realized I really like mustard yellow on me and burnt orange and these things that I would have never tried. I was going for like the dark greens and the dark blues and all that. So I really like that. Just trust your gut and go with what you feel confident in.
Yeah, exactly. And the good thing about it is when you want to experiment with these colors, you can just borrow items from a friend's wardrobe, or you can rent them, or you can go to the op shop. Like, you don't have to buy them then and there, the most expensive item. You can sort of play around with what's in the op shop. You can just hold it up to yourself and then be like, nope, doesn't work. But you don't have to buy anything.
Yes. Have you found that there's certain colors that usually pretty much everybody looks good in? No matter shape, size, skin tone, anything like that. Have you noticed any trends where you feel like maybe even your clients are saying, oh, I really love this color? And that's becoming like kind of a pattern that you see among them.
I do think... it sort of depends because there's shades of colors. So you could be like, oh, I really like forest green, but then another person could look really good in neon green. So it really depends on the sort of person. I do think those autumny colors do suit a lot of people, but they may have to have like a slightly different depth to them. And red does suit a lot of people, but again, it needs that sort of depth. So it might be a darker red or it might be a lighter red. So there's not really a one color suits everyone, maybe apart from black. I mean, that's the best color ever. and even with white, some people are more of a stark white or some people more of a cream white. So yeah, it really depends on sort of the tone of the color more than the actual color sometimes.
That makes sense. Mm. And, you know, what if somebody's tuning in right now and they're like, you know, they haven't really tried kind of the sustainable fashion route, but they're really interested in taking some first steps. Do you have any tips for them? I myself have used like ThreadUp.com a lot and all my local thrift shops, and going to a thrift store is always like my first stop when I'm looking for a piece. But sometimes you're looking for something really specific in a specific size or something that the thrift shops just don't have. Do you have any tips for people who want to fill their wardrobe with sustainable pieces?
I think it's important to start with what you have and just take a look there, and then of course identify your gaps, because the most sustainable wardrobe is the one you own. I can't claim that wording. I know it's been said many times by many people, but work with what you have first off. I like to sort of go up the scale, I guess. So if you've got a community that lives near you, or a sister or a brother or a friend, maybe look at sharing their wardrobe and see what they have. It doesn't mean, you know, you have to steal everything out of their wardrobe. It could be just like a one-off occasion. Like, you know, you've got a bridesmaid party and you have to wear green or something like that. Like, you know, borrow something green from their wardrobe. Sort of the next step is, you know, going op shopping. I know it can be overwhelming when you walk in and it's not organized as like a H&M or something.
Yeah.
But I think the best thing to do is have a list and be like, right, I'm looking for turtlenecks. So you go along the rail and just look for turtlenecks. And then, you know, the next one on your list is like, you know, a dress with a flare bottom or something like that. So you go along and look for that. Really sort of, until you get to know op shops better or know your op shop better, really sort of just sticking to your list. And then you can start to explore and play in the op shop, because you know, because they're not organized like traditional stores, you never know what you're going to find in certain sections. So there might be something in the mass section that's actually more femme fitting. So you can try that, or it might be the opposite way, or like even in the kids section, I found really cool things. So it's worth exploring. But if they are overwhelming, just start small and just sort of stick to the one rail. And then, of course, ThredUp, which I think does exist here in Australia, but I haven't used it. I don't think it's quite as common for us as it is for you. But I think pretty much, does Depop exist over there?
Depop? I don't know. I haven't heard of that one. Oh. I'm going to write that down.
Oh. Okay. Well, Depop, I know I use it here in Australia and I'm pretty sure it's worldwide.
Okay.
eBay? You have eBay over there?
Oh, now? Yes.
We do have eBay. eBay is a great one. But because like these platforms like eBay and Depop and ThredUp, you can search for your favorite designers. So you can like type in your designer, set as a safe search, and that's where you can find those sort of pieces. If you want to know what designers you like, you know, go for a little shopping trip, but don't take your wallet or don't allow yourself to buy anything. Just try things on to find the style you're looking for. So say you're like, oh, I really need a new pair of jeans, you know, visit a shop and just try on all the jeans. It's going to take a while and it's going to be hard. But you sort of need to do this to find the shape you're looking for. You know, don't even really take a friend because you don't want anyone to convince you into buying things. But just look at shapes. So you're like, does a wide leg jean fit me better? Is a high waisted better? Or do I like a mid rise? Like, look at these factors. And then that's where you can type in eBay. Like, you know, you can type in Levi's jeans or something like that, bootcut or whatever you're looking for. And then you can find them secondhand. Consignment stores I know exist a lot over there as well.
Yes.
We don't have many here in Australia, but they're building. But yeah, consignment stores sort of similar to op shops, stick to a list until you get used to it. But the great thing about it is it's all curated for you. So you're not having to go through like piles and piles of fast fashion or things that are ripped and torn. You know, all those amazing brands are already there. And you can also rent items if you're not sure how something will fit, especially for occasion wear. If you've got a big event coming up, you can be like, oh, just rent the dress instead of trying to find one. It's much easier to sit on the couch and scroll and rent the dress and then return it to the post office than go hunting and hunting in all the shops and all the other various shops. Because rental services have all the brands in one web page. So much easier. And then, like, finally, you can look into your sustainable brands. I know there's, like, so many brands that are so transparent all over the world. So you got to do a little bit of digging, and it is a little bit hard. But I recommend saving this one for sort of last, because then you can sort of work your way up and know a little bit more about sustainable fashion and what works for you. And then you can invest in the really high quality good things that will last a lifetime.
Mm.
I think that covered it all.
Yeah, no. Oh, that's so good. And it's true. Like once I feel like I found certain shapes and colors that I liked on me, it's so much easier to go to a pre-owned shop or go to ThredUp.com, because you could literally search for anything. You can search by color, by size, by shape, by style, by designer. It's really nice. And people are always shocked to find that what I'm wearing came from a thrift shop. Because I wear a lot of designer stuff. I wear a lot of things that look very, like, they're very high quality. And people are shocked that I paid like $7 for them. And so I'm just
it's
such
so
a
good.
Fan of it. It's so much fun.
And it's so good to share that bargain. Like at work the other day, I got a pair of Izzy Miyake pants. So I'd been looking for like the really pleated, fashionable ones that everyone loves.
Mm.
And they retail for about $400, $500. But
oh,
I got them for less than half price.
Wow.
Like, you know, I still paid a bunch for them. But I got to use the store credit because I'd sold stuff at work. I mean, I have the unfair advantage of working there, so I see it before it comes on the floor. But, you know, like, and other things, like I found some really amazing things like on Depop and on eBay, but like so much cheaper. And it blows my mind when people tell me they don't want to buy secondhand, because it saves money. You know, it's limiting our resources on this planet, and it really helps you to get to know your style. And you can experiment with your style if you want as well. There's so many eras in one op shop. It's insane. I love it so much.
Yeah, me too. It's truly so. It's like going on a scavenger hunt. So much fun. And and I find such unique things at thrift shops. Like the things that I find at a thrift shop, I like better than going to like your average department store.
Yes.
So there's just so many benefits to it. Let's say that you've been looking for something specific, but you have not been able to find it in any of your consignment shops or pre-owned places or thrift stores. What do you have any brands that you really like? If you're buying something brand new and you're okay with buying something brand new, where do you go? Because that's what I really struggle with. I feel like I will exhaust my options at the thrift shops. And I'm like, well, shit, I got to just go to Target and get something. What other options does somebody like me have for purchasing something brand new and making sure that it was ethically sourced and created and all that stuff?
So here in Australia, we have Ethical Clothing Australia. So it's a certification. I'm sure there would be a equivalent for you as well. Okay. You might have to do a little bit of research, but basically it certifies that the clothing that's made, it's for Australian brands that make their clothing, around about 98% of their clothing is made here in Australia. And it certifies that the workers are paid fairly, because that's a huge thing with sustainable or any sort of fashion, is that the workers aren't paid correctly. You know, I read a stat that I think it was people in Bangladesh who make our garments earn like something like 30 or 63 cents, like Australian, like, but that's like not even much in your money. So like, that is ridiculous.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I'm paid about $25 per hour. So like comparing that to that is, you know, it's absolutely ridiculous. So I use that certification to shop for brands. There's also the GOTS certification, which I'm pretty sure is worldwide. GOTS stands for Global Organic Textile Standard. And this mainly certifies the fabric more than the worker. So it certifies that the garment is organically made. So it means that, you know, there's no dyes, there's no bleaches, that sort of thing in the fabric. And I think that's a really good one. Usually people that use GOTS also ethically pay their workers. There's so many other sort of certifications to look into. Some can be a little bit greenwashy and not quite tell the truth. So you do have to dig a little bit. But I also like the Good On You app, which is not just Australian, but it is Australian made.
Ooh.
But they have many other, yeah, Good On You.
Good so On You. App. I'm writing all this down.
And it has lots of brands worldwide in it that are rated. So if you type in your favorite brand, you can sort of see, again, like all these sort of certifications do have ups and downs to them. You do have to research a little bit, but it's a starting point and it helps you dig a little bit deeper. So they rate the brand, Good On You rates the brand. So you could type in, you know, H&M and they'll be like, not doing good enough. Or you could type in another brand, they're like, doing amazingly because they use this and this and this and they pay their workers correctly. For me, my favorite brands are Australian based or New Zealand based. So I love Koto. They do amazing organic cotton garments and they just, I just cannot describe, like everything I get from there just fits me so well. There's another brand called ABCH made here in Australia. They're really nice basic items with organic fibers. Then there's a few other sort of little local brands around my area here in Melbourne that are all made really close to where I live, which is fun to shop at. Oh, there's so many that I could just reel off, but I think the most important thing is to ask them. So, you know, get to know if you are familiar with your area. You know, do a little googling, local brands that use sustainable practices or ethical brands in blah, 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 because they will pop up. If a brand is doing good, they will tell you. They will not keep it a secret.
Right. Oh, that's such a good point. Yes. Mm. Yes.
But if you're not sure if a brand is doing good things, you know, send them a little message or an email or something. If they don't reply back after having seen it, or they sort of give you a wishy-washy answer, then you probably know they're not doing good things. Like a common one is, you know, do you pay your garment workers a living wage? And if they sort of say, because there's a distinction between living wage and like a fair wage sort of thing. Mm. And if they sort of don't say, you know, they sort of say like our garment workers are treated fairly, but they provide no certifications, because there's certifications for factories all over the world. And those certifications, well, I cannot remember them off the top of my head because they have lots of names and numbers.
Yeah.
They tell you if the garment worker is paid fairly or if the garment factory adheres to certain codes. So if they don't really sort of say anything like that, you sort of know that they either don't know, they haven't dug deep, or they're not really telling you the truth.
Right.
I do think another thing is if you go into a brand and they've got, you know, piles and piles of clothing and it's a store full of clothing, like, you know, H&M, I don't think that can be that ethical. No matter how many conscious collections they do produce, I don't think having a brand with so many clothing or so many releases or so many drops like the Zara's and H&M's can be ethical. Because to have $20 pair of jeans, you cannot pay your garment worker correctly. There's going to be something along the line that means someone will miss out. So that's just my point of view. In saying that, you know, sustainable fashion is expensive and it is something you really need to align your values with. If you cannot afford it, that's totally fine. State of the world is, you know, crazy right now. Right. That's like, for me, sustainable fashion is number one. So I will save up for something that I really love. And when it's in my wardrobe, it feels so happy because I know I've supported somewhere, someone along the line. I've supported a local maker, that sort of thing. And it just means the world to me that my wardrobe aligns with the values that I have.
Yeah.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
The brands that I really love so much, they're very transparent where everything comes from, how they make it, what's in it, all that. And when you have to go hunting and digging for that information or you're not getting responded to, something is up, you know, something is going on. And I think, do you think there's a certain price point or anything else somebody can use to kind of determine, I wonder if this is ethical? Let's say they're out and about, obviously, if they see like a $3 t-shirt that's brand new, probably not, you know, some, like you said, somebody probably missed out somewhere along that production line. Do you think there's anything else we can look to or a certain price point that you feel like, yeah, that's probably okay to buy that thing? They probably got a much more fair wage.
It's hard to place a price point on things because, you know, like there's Gucci with like, you know, their $1 million handbags, but they're not produced that ethically. They're not that transparent. But I do know of some brands that produce in Cambodia and I've met the maker. They are transparent, but their tees are like $50, $40. So, you know, that's not too bad of a price for a t-shirt. I think you've got to consider the garment. So if you, you know, pick up, this is not talking about, you know, secondhand or things like that, but if you pick up a jacket and it's got like a price tag of like $50 on it, when you look at a jacket, there's the lining, there's the sleeves, there's the label, there's the buttonholes, usually two different types of fabric, but they all connect to each other and the bodice might be like four different pieces. Like when you look at it from a pattern making perspective, I've tried to make a jacket. It's hard. I failed. It's hard to put all these pieces together and create the lining so it fits someone nicely. So when you look at a jacket and it's like $50, you're like, well, unless like, you know, you saw someone make it in front of you, you're like, well, was the garment worker paid fairly to create this extremely hard jacket because of so many pattern pieces? Like I sort of gauge the price on the item. For t-shirts, it's a little bit simpler. I'd probably go about $50, $40. But then I sort of work my way up there depending on the level of how the garment is made. So the more complex, the more I would expect to pay for something, to be honest, because the true cost of fashion is not the $5 tees, it's the quite expensive stuff. But we've been trained to expect that everything really cheap and really fast, unfortunately, at the moment.
Yes, yes. Is there ever a point where, you know, the person making the garment is getting paid a fair wage, but they're able to, a very low cost item because the material kind of sucks? Is that a thing? It's like, we'll pay you a good wage, but we're going to use this like tissue paper as, you know, material for this t-shirt. Is that a situation too? Or does that not usually happen?
I guess it depends on the designer. If they want to use crappy fabric and pay their garment worker a fair wage, like good on the garment worker, but I don't know if the designer's what their designer is going for. It could be like a concept runway where things are worn once. Or it could be some sort of, I don't know. I guess it depends on the designer with fabric like that. I mean, it doesn't make good business sense.
Right.
But it could be a thing. I know we had paper dresses in like the 60s or something. So, you know.
Okay, so where I'm at with my wardrobe is I would love to have a capsule wardrobe that was for like year round. So I live in California. We don't get snow. We really don't get much rain or like it doesn't get too cold. So I feel like I could do it.
Do you have any tips for somebody who might want to have a capsule wardrobe that is not just seasonal, but good all year round? What are like some must-haves in that wardrobe?
Look, I live in Melbourne. It's four seasons in one day. So I don't know if I'm the best person to ask. It's been raining. It's meant to be spring now, but it's been raining like heavily for the past about 3 days or something. There's like flood warnings all over the state.
Oh,
but I think with a capsule wardrobe, it goes back to figuring out what you actually want to wear. So again, you know, do you have the ball dresses when you're not going to any balls, or do you have the suits when you're not going to any suited events? So yeah, it comes back to that. It's researching what you actually do and then matching it together. Obviously, I think the most basic items for a capsule wardrobe are your t-shirts, your singlet tops, you know, things you might be able to layer a little bit if it is a little bit of a cold snap. It also depends on if you plan on traveling as well. So there's so many factors in your lifestyle you've got to figure out. But if you're based in like, you know, a fair climate, I think you could get away with like, you know, having, you know, maybe a couple of t-shirts in a few colors. I think a pair of jeans is always a good choice, as they're hard wearing and you don't really need to wash them that often. Also, obviously having colors that match is pretty important. Because you don't want standout pieces that don't go together. It doesn't quite work in a capsule wardrobe. Capsule wardrobes can be anywhere from about 30 to 50 pieces, depending on the person. Okay. Yeah, it sort of depends on the person. I've sort of tried to do both sometimes. I kind of had like a spring-summer capsule collection and then a winter-autumn capsule collection, but they often cross over because of the weather. I really love a nice pair of linen pants. With a matching jacket, because it allows you to create a suit if you need or if you don't need. It doesn't have to be a matching jacket, but it could be like, you know, cream linen pants or beige linen pants with a black jacket, because you can create so many looks when you separate them, but also like a nice statement look for an event when you pair them together.
Nice.
Same with like maybe a skirt and a top sort of thing situation. I think always, you know, natural fibers are really good as well. Light pieces, if you're in, you know, the even temperate places, nice light pieces. If you get polyester things, you start to sweat more. It makes your skin all itchy, like you're in like a little, I don't know, plastic bag or something. So always opt for those natural fibers where you can. Shoes are obviously important. You want to have I think the sort of the rule is you should allow your shoes to breathe after you wear them once or twice. So it's sort of like, you know, to keep them in top tip condition, allow them to sort of breathe a bit after you wear them. So if you're wearing a pair of sneakers day after day after day, probably best to rotate two pairs of sneakers or something like that, or a pair of boots, just to keep them, like if you're pounding the pavement every single day wearing them, they're going to start to sort of, you know, decay a bit faster. So it's good to have maybe one or two pairs to rotate a bit. You know, sort of same with t-shirts. If you're wearing the same t-shirt day after day, it's going to get sweatier and stickier and stained faster. So to keep your items in a longer, like, you know, better condition for longer, it's best to sort of rotate and care for them better. I think that's what I would have in, you know, if I lived in a nice climate where it didn't rain all the time, I'd sort of have those really nice sort of separate pieces, and maybe sort of a nice dress for events that I could also layer with a t-shirt or something to create a more casual look. Accessories are also important, but I'm happy to wear the same thing over and over again. So I don't use accessories that much to play up my outfits. But if you were a person like that, you could use scarves, you could use different types of jewelry to sort of change up the look of an outfit. You can also use makeup as well to change up the look of an outfit if you wear makeup. Clothing is fun, but if you go with a capsule wardrobe, it can sometimes feel a bit restrictive. So it's important to find those different avenues to sort of play around with. But I also like the idea of just wearing the same thing over and over again, because I love it and do not care if anyone notices.
Yes, I feel the same. You mentioned like the more breathable fabrics and stuff. What would those be? You mentioned linen, which now I'm like, I really want a pair of linen pants. Would that be like cotton, anything else in that realm?
Yeah, so your natural fibers are cotton, linen. Viscose is a man-made natural fiber. Viscose or rayon or similar sounding ones are usually made from the bamboos included. So bamboo, eucalyptus trees or tree offcuts, or even sometimes cotton offcuts, are also the viscose rayon family. They're man-made because, you know, if you think of a tree and then a piece of fabric, it takes a long time to get the tree to the fabric, doesn't it? It's a very chemically intensive process to get it to the fabric that we wear on our skin. But it's actually banned, I think, in the US because the chemicals used to create it are extremely toxic, and they actually can cause, like, you know, skin and lung and brain cancer sort of thing.
Oh, wow.
So with viscose, yeah, with viscose, it's still made. But if you are looking to buy viscose, it's best to look for certifications. I think Lenzing is the best one to look for with viscose, because they ensure that the production line is more ethically certified and more eco-friendly. You know, they reuse the chemicals, they don't dump them in the water, they capture any off gases, that sort of thing. But natural fibers, you know, they are easier to care for. They don't require as much washing. It's a better process for them when they're grown, because polyester comes from oil, and we don't want to be dragging any more of that up into our clothing, into our cars. We want to leave that where it is. It's also usually a less, like, cotton and linen and even hemp have been around for so many years. So we have these ways to make them. And people, you know, this is their family history is making these fibers. So we've got the processes down pat, and we know how to create them. So it's an easier process for us. We are branching out into, like, you know, especially vegan friendly technology and fibers and fabrics, but it takes a while to sort of get them down pat. I like natural fibers because they feel good on the skin. You know, they're not itchy or rashy, and they last longer. So, you know, you've got, like, I'm wearing a cotton top right now, and it's secondhand, and it looks totally fine. But they also biodegrade in most cases. So, you know, your cotton top can just, like, you know, either be chopped up and put back into the earth, or it can be used as something else. Whereas, like, things like polyester, you can't really put it in the garden and wait for it to biodegrade, because it won't. And polyester also releases little microfibers into our oceans and waterways, which, you know, they've found microfibers in our blood. So I don't really want to wear a t-shirt that contributes to that, and then finding microfibers in our blood. Like, I read a study that said we eat a credit card a week.
I heard that too. Just little bits of plastic, like, in our food hanging out. So gross. Yeah.
I know. Yeah. So, like, I don't want to be contributing to that sort of thing. So I stick to natural fibers. And I think they're just really the best thing. Like, you know, there are instances where it's like, you know, maybe a workout fabric is more of a lycra polyester sort of thing. And also usually sometimes a little bit cheaper, I find.
Yes, I do all the faux stuff. I, you know, faux leather. What is that made out of?
Usually it's plastic, you know, which is not great. But what I figure is that I'm buying this for longevity. I'm not buying this to throw out in 2 weeks. No. I'm buying it to look after and care for it for longer. And I'm not buying plastic shoes every 2 seconds. But they've also got apple leather, orange leather, pineapple leather.
What? There was
a kombucha leather at one point.
Fruit made out of fruit?
Yeah. Sand leather. Cactus leather, they mimic the feel and even the smell of leather sometimes.
Whoa.
I've got a cactus leather backpack, and it feels the same. Yeah.
Oh,
so yeah, the technology
so
is like taking right off in that space. It's amazing.
Oh, that's so cool. Yeah. I think a lot of the silk I buy now is that made of bamboo? Like, if you're looking for a plant-based or vegan alternative, what is, like, a vegan silk that you can look
vegan
for?
Vegan silk is usually viscose or bamboo.
Okay, it is.
Nice and soft. Yeah, it's nice and soft. Usually bamboo is used to make underwear or things like that, because it is quite breathable. Again, the sort of the same things apply with viscose, bamboo, that it can be quite chemically intensive. So you can look for those certifications, in my opinion. Or, you know, buy less if you can't find the certifications. You know, fashion is not a perfect little world where everything is eco-friendly. There's so many little, like, you know, good or bad or gray areas.
Yeah.
I think it just comes down to doing your best and going your values is sort of the end thing. And I think wherever you buy something from, you just need to care for it. Like, you made a reason to buy this thing, so look after it. Like, you know, look after it like you would a little plant or something, you know.
Right.
Tend to it and mend it, and then when it's time for it to go, you know, make sure it goes the correct way and it's not polluting our earth. Do the best you can.
Yeah, no, that's so good and so true. And then what I have noticed is that I've had to do certain things to kind of not trick myself into dressing a little bit better every day, but just making it more simple for me to dress in a way that makes me feel more confident every day. I'm buying a lot of white tops and denim right now because they just kind of go with everything. And then I have a lot of like tan or neutral type of pieces with just a few pops of color. But I'm really trying to make sure like everything kind of goes together. So that way it just relieves a lot of stress when I'm thinking about what to wear. I know that pretty much anything will go with anything else. I'm buying black and brown accessories like purses and shoes, but I've really had to get rid of as much as possible that makes me feel like shit. Because if there's an option to like dip into the sweatpants that make me feel like crap, I will go for those because they're so easy. But do you have any tips and tricks like that for somebody who really does want to, you know, make an improvement in this area for their own confidence and like overall well-being, but they feel like they keep going for the thing that doesn't make them feel good?
I mean, like, it's always good to hire a stylist. If you're truly stuck, yeah, you truly do not know, it is always good to hire a stylist. And you can say that, look, I don't want to go shopping. I just want help with what's in my wardrobe right now. I want help with things that identify, that go with my body shape. I want to know what I should lose from my wardrobe. Maybe you could write a list for me. Like, you don't have to go shopping. Like, you know, a stylist, you're hiring them. So you can say to them, look, I don't want this and this and this. I don't do this and this. They will cater to you.
Right.
I think it's important that we don't view stylists as people that will just buy us lots of things, because buying lots of things is not the answer to creating a really good wardrobe. You've got to take it slow to figure out what you liked, what you'd love.
Yeah.
I think for me, the basics that I own, that, like, you know, I want to be comfortable and spend the day inside in, are basics that I still feel good in. So, like, you know, I've got the track pants, but they're actually kind of like a high-end track pant, I guess. Like, they feel really nice against my skin and they look really good and I feel comfortable. I'm not afraid to answer the door, even though they're covered in cat fur. I'm not afraid to answer the door or go to the bin in them. Because I, you know, I still feel good. I still feel good in it. And I think, like, if there's something that you just don't, like, you feel terrible in but you keep going to it, maybe identify what it is that's so terrible about it that you don't feel good in. It could be any item of clothing, but it could be like, oh, the sleeves are too long, or the neckline is too round, or, you know, the logo placement is really weird. And then it's probably time to let go of it or replace it in some way. Also, it might be the way you're styling it as well. You could be just uninspired. If you need more inspiration, look around you wherever you are, because there's so much inspiration out there. We just had Melbourne Fashion Week here, and like, to see all the really cool people dressed up in ways that I didn't even think, really gave me some more sort of energy to go through my wardrobe and try different ways. I saw someone the other day on a tram and they looked amazing. So I went home and like just recreated their outfit with what I own. And it felt so good to like sort of like channel someone else's style but make it my own, but also use my items in a different way. Pinterest is a great resource. Instagram, like, you know, just sort of go through and find people you love the look of. Like, you know, don't be tempted to buy because you probably already have it, but just look at how they roll up the sleeve or how they tuck the pants in, or what little details bring something really cool to their outfit. You know, look at those details and sort of see how you can bring them into your wardrobe.
Oh, I love that point, because a lot of people will ask, because I'll tell people I'm trying to build like an evergreen capsule wardrobe, like for the whole year indefinitely. And people will say, like, isn't that kind of boring? Like just wearing the same thing over and over. I'm like, actually, it feels the opposite of boring, because I mix and match things so much more.
Yes.
I pair things together that I wouldn't have paired together before, because there is a limited amount of things. So I'm adding, you know, this shirt over a dress and this and that. So what would you say to somebody who was like, I don't know, it just kind of sounds like this could be a boring thing. Can you talk about like the creativity behind it that you might find when you have more of a minimalist wardrobe?
Well, I think when you have less, you're more creative. So if you think back in the day when we didn't have many, like, you know, people didn't go out and buy garments, like there wasn't that option. They would fix them and mend them and then make blankets out of them, and then they'd make a whole new garment. Like, that cycle, that fabric was so precious to them that they just kept reinventing it in some way. Yeah. And then there's even an episode of The Simpsons where Marge finds a Chanel suit at the op shop, and she just keeps chopping it up in different ways to make it as seem she wasn't wearing the same thing. I think that gets a bit creative. It's just all about how you style it. Like, honestly, I'm so happy to wear the same thing over and over again. Like, that's me. That's my brand. I do not mind. But if I feel a bit stuck, I just try different things. I just layer different things, because, you know, fashion is what you buy, but style is what makes it your own and what makes it creative. Mm. So, you know, if you're wearing it backwards, you're wearing it inside out, like, half the time fashion nowadays have seams exposed on the outside. So what does it matter what you wear? Like everything I wore as a child and as a teenager is back in fashion now. So I could literally, if I had my old wardrobe, I could dig it out and wear it again and I'd still be in fashion. You know, as much as we think that we're sort of, you know, have this overlord who says what we should wear, we really make the rules. So, you know, get a little bit creative with how you're dressing, you know, try something a little bit different. You know, you have scissors, you have thread, maybe chop it up a little bit. Like try all these different things because you never know what you could create if you don't try. Like, you know, if you're wearing the same t-shirt and jeans, you're like, oh, I'm so bored. Well, it's because you're not trying to find any way to wear something. So yeah. You're not experimenting. You're not looking at inspiration from outside. Like even if you just wore a different shoe with the jeans or you just rolled them up a different way or you tucked the shirt in or you wore a necklace or a scarf or a hat, like, or a different jacket, it brings back that spark of creativity that you're seeking. You know, capsule wardrobes are fun. They can be boring like other people think. But I think when you've got less, you're like, oh, I can be more creative with it. I can have more fun. Like there was, I remember seeing in the early days of sustainable fashion research, a woman that wore one dress for like a whole month or something. I mean, she just kept styling it different ways. But if you think about it, usually people, like usually the men identifying people on like breakfast TV or something, they just wear the same suit. But it's the woman identifying person that dresses all up, but they just wear the same thing with maybe a different tie. So, you know, channel them and sort of wear the same thing, but spice it up a different way with a tie or, you know, there's no limit to what you can create. You're the only one judging yourself. No one else cares. They're too worried with their own wardrobe. Or they'll be like, oh my God, I never thought of wearing it that way. I'm going to go home and do it myself.
Yes. And I have just noticed so much since I made these changes with my wardrobe. It has reduced so much decision fatigue for me. We make a bazillion decisions every single day about everything. And I want to minimize how many decisions I'm making in a day. So being able to go to my closet and pick whatever items, knowing that they're going to work together, has been such a relief, you know?
Yes.
Did you experience that change as well, that shift? Have your clients mentioned anything like that as well, like when they simplify their wardrobe, you know, with your help? Yeah. How does it affect people?
I had a client the other day who, she already had a small wardrobe, but she had pieces in there that were given to her or she'd just taken because it was cheap at the op shop. But I could see those pieces didn't really represent her. And when she pulled it out, she was like, oh, I just picked this up at the op shop or my mother-in-law gave it to me. And I was like, you don't even sound like you want it in your wardrobe. And she's like, well, yeah, it was just free clothes, you know. I feel like I should take it. And I was like, well, no, that doesn't represent your style. So I simplified this woman's wardrobe. And she was like, and then I emailed her a few days later. She's like, oh, it's so much easier to get dressed now because I'd taken out that sort of bulk that was confusing her. And I'd taken out the pieces that she didn't, like, know how to wear or didn't love. And she's like, it's so much easier to get dressed now. I can just throw things on. And, like, I found the same thing with my wardrobe. Like, the more pieces I have, the less creative and, I guess, less stylish I am because I'm just, I just keep going back to the same pieces I wear all the time. Like, you know, I like to wear the same pants in summer and I just change a different top. Then in winter I have a pair of jeans that's quite similar and I just wear those and I just change the top up and add a jacket. Like for me, that is, I'm so happy to dress like that. Like I'd rather less than have more. And I'd rather the pieces that I have be so versatile, exactly my color palette. Like I have a jacket that I wear when I want to feel a little bit special. And usually when I wear it, I'm presenting at a panel or I'm having my photo taken. So like, you know, that's sort of like creates a little symbol of me as well. So people know me with that jacket and I've gotten so many compliments on it and I feel so good in it. And it was so nice that I could, you know, make that decision and make it easy on myself to know I'll wear this jacket for a long period of time and I won't get rid of it again. But yeah, just like, there's going to be people out there that are like, yeah, I'm maximalist and I love all these things and they'll wear all these things and that's totally fine. And no one has to be like, you know, not everyone has to be minimalist. But I think even if you don't, you're a little bit scared to go into the capsule journey, just sort of, you know, take, like we only wear about 30% of our wardrobe, 20 to 30% of our wardrobe anyway, depending on how much stuff we have. So if you're a little bit scared of going down that sort of path of creating a capsule wardrobe, just see if you can like maybe do like 30 garments for 30 days or something like that. Like, you know, only wear this set of garments for 30 days or even 10 garments for 30 days or, you know, that sort of thing to see, you know, put the rest away, maybe keep a jacket if it's going to be cold, but sort of pop the rest away in a box somewhere and just concentrate on these items. And you might find you don't need the rest.
Yeah.
So, yeah, yes. It's really about experimenting with your wardrobe rather than bringing things into it because you have it already. You made those choices already.
Absolutely. Maybe we can wrap up by sharing like what we both feel confident in. Maybe this will give people some ideas of where they can, you know, spice things up in their wardrobe. So what makes you feel confident, let's say at a day of work or going out with friends, or if you want to give a couple options of like your go-tos?
So it's, you know, meant to be spring here, so it's a little bit warm, so I'm able to wear my sort of linen pieces. It's also been fashion week, so I attended a runway on Tuesday night, and I wore this amazing linen suit that I've been wanting for years. I could never find it in op shops because, you know, usually suits are quite boxy and I'm quite like a slim fit, so I could never find it in op shops, but I managed to find one from a local designer, and I wore this really nice, it's sort of a beige linen piece, and I wore a really nice sort of top underneath that came in sort of around my, it like sort of accentuated my shoulders. I had a little gold chain and a little brown belt, and I had a black bag that I got off Depop with some black shoes. And I just, like, no one took a photo of me for like, you know, street style, but I just felt so good in my outfit. And it's a high rise pant that sort of falls from my waist, and it was cinched in a little bit at the waist. So it accentuated my figure. And I felt like a million bucks despite this really simple outfit of limited color. Another one I wear, I guess, like, you know, day-to-day work is like usually the same pants. I have the same pants in black and beige because I love them so much. And I just sort of swap the colors around. But usually in the summer months, it's sort of the similar pants that are high-rise with pleated front, with a little black sandal and then like maybe a little sort of tank top, singlet sort of top. In either black or white, that have sort of different necklines. So one is sort of an off-the-shoulder style, one sits quite high and then curves around my shoulders. And then I add a little gold chain, some little gold earrings, and then I throw an oversized men's shirt over the top to protect me from the sun and provide like a little bit of warmth if I'm in, like, because our working space is sometimes a little bit cold at times, like a bit of a chill. So just like, you know, a white shirt over the top. But I also have a pistachio green shirt. This is a pop of colour to my wardrobe, and it pairs really well with the beige and the white, so that adds a really nice, fun pop of colour. They're sort of the two outfits I feel really comfortable in, but I know I can wear the suit to work, and I could wear the other outfit to a fashion show, so they cross right over. But I'm comfortable in, like, really minimalistic sort of colours, so really natural tones. Sort of the green is the only pop of colour in my wardrobe. It's funny, I like things that sort of... here in Melbourne, it kind of looks like a singlet and old man pants that are pulled up really high. Like what an old Italian man here tending his garden would wear. But I love the style, so, and I feel comfortable in it. So I just keep re-wearing it.
You mentioned kind of being able to wear the same thing in different areas. For me, when I had like a 9-to-5 corporate job, my work attire and my play attire felt very different and very separate. And now I've noticed that the way that I dress at work is also how I enjoy dressing, like when I go out and meet friends and go out like on a date or whatever. And there's not as much separation, which I actually really like. And I feel like more myself the whole time. And what I've realized, these are just some tips for myself. I don't know if this will help anybody. What I feel the most confident in is are colors that make me look a little bit more tan than I actually am, because I am very, very pale. And so I like a lot of those mint greens and the whites and the mustard color and like kind of burnt orangey stuff. It's like what makes me kind of look a little bit more tan, and what also makes me feel like I am a boss. It makes me feel like I am crushing it. That is how I've built my wardrobe the last couple of years. Is like,
that's how you want to build it. That's exactly the vibe which you're going for. Instead of pleasing others, we please ourselves, and what makes us feel, you know, over the moon confident.
Yes. And so what I have found that I feel the best in right now is like, I like high-waisted denim jeans, white button-up blouses with gold jewelry accents, like very pretty basic, but I just feel so good in them. And then if I'm going out with friends or like going out on a date night, it's something very similar, but I'll just add like a little, what do you call it, Jenna? Like a cami, like a little tiny sweater over it. I'll put a little sweater still kind of opened, you know, not buttoned up. And then I'll put boots on instead of like walking around, you know, barefoot in my house or something. And I'll just slightly dress it up with a couple things, but it's the same thing that I wore at work. And then if I go on like a date or something or out for like, you know, an evening, I really like dresses that are pretty form fitting, which is so opposite the way that I used to dress. I wore a lot of baggy stuff. And especially when it came to dresses, very like flowy and almost too big for me. But now I'm finding that I like the things that kind of hug me a little bit tighter, which kind of surprised me. So I'm going for like kind of thick, what do you call these? Not spaghetti straps. Thick straps and a little bit of cleavage, not too much, but a little boob. And that's kind of my go-to, but same thing. Like I might wear some gold jewelry, and I've really enjoyed wearing family heirloom pieces, gold jewelry from like my grandmother and stuff. And that is making me feel really good right now. So maybe that gives some people some ideas. And I love the fact that you just mentioned it's just what makes you feel good and allowing yourself to like play and discover that.
It's fine to play around with clothing at whatever age you are, and just find, you know, your style will change as you grow, and that's totally fine as well. We don't have to stick to one style. It's just more about, you know, buying less, buying good quality, caring for those items, and then finding a way to let go of them ethically. Don't let anyone else tell you what, you know, should or shouldn't wear. Find out, you know, take the journey and find what you like wearing. It may take a while. It's taken me like, you know, 20 years to find what I want to wear now. But, you know, this is what it is. If no one can walk up to you and tell you you should wear this and this and this, like they can, but you might not like wearing it. It's what you feel comfortable and confident in is the main thing.
I love it. And Jenna, where can people find you and your work and, you know, book you for your service potentially and all that good stuff?
You can find me at Ironic Minimalist on Instagram, and my website is just ironicminimalist.com. Yeah, and if you're ever in Australia, you will find me at Mutual Muse.
Fabulous. Well, thank you so much. Really appreciate it. This episode just makes me want to simplify my wardrobe even more, or do one of those experiments, you know, to see how little clothing I need. Anyone else just enjoy decluttering and challenges like that? I just find it so fun. Wrapping up with a quote that was submitted by one of our patrons, as well as the Apple Podcast review of the episode. So this quote was submitted by Amelia, and it says, "In a world of constant change and streaming technology, I find solace in the forest where a tree remains a tree." And that quote is attributed to Angie Wyland Crosby. Yes, I mean, it's amazing how sometimes just a short break outside can feel like such a reset. I don't know about you guys, but so much of my work is on a computer, staring at a screen, and then I'll go outside for a bit where it feels more peaceful, or just, you know, a slower pace at least. And it's just this very strange experience of contrast of how busy and everything on technology can seem. And then you go out into the real world. And of course, depending on where you are, it just feels very different. And I don't know, sometimes I feel like I'm caught in between two different dimensions sometimes. Like, whoa, outside is technically the real reality, but so much of my time is spent on a computer, the virtual reality. I don't know. It's just a very strange juxtaposition. So anyway, we should do a whole episode on that shit. Thank you so much, Amelia, for submitting that quote. If you want to submit a quote that will get read on an upcoming episode, you can do so at patreon.com/selfhelpless, along with a bunch of other rewards and goodies you get over there. And today's review is from Susie Snowflake 16. It says, "Love it," with an exclamation point, heart emoji, okay emoji, the three fingers with the hole, right? Some clapping emoji, and some like woohoo, like praise emoji. Thank you so much, Susie. You're the best. I really appreciate it. If you want to leave a review, you can do so on your Apple Podcast app. And in exchange for you taking the time out of your day to submit a review, I like taking time on the podcast to personally thank you for it. All right, everybody. I hope this episode gave you some fun little nuggets to consider, and I will talk to you soon.
Maybe I'm
self-helpless. Thank you for tuning in to the Self-Helpless Podcast. You can find our Patreon community, merch, and other goodies at selfhelplesspodcast.com. We'd be thrilled if you left an iTunes review, shared this episode with a friend, or post about it on Instagram and tag @selfhelplesspodcast so we can repost you and say hi. Thanks, everyone.